You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by OnTap Credit Union. And now, The Porchcast.
All righty, everyone, and welcome to episode 92 of The Porchcast. My name is Tristan, once again joined by Bryant and Corey. Great to see you guys. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. It's nice to see some familiar faces, have some conversations.
Well, I'm super jazzed. This is episode 92. And we're very thrilled to welcome Andrew Copeland to the show. Andrew, how's it going, man?
I'm very excited to hang out with you, but I'm more excited to see you all in person next week. I'm spending so much time at a computer, so looking forward to some in-person interactions.
That's right. That's a very appropriate tease. This is going to be a very special CBC preview edition of the show, and what better guy to have on as a guest as Andrew himself. Andrew, for those who aren't as familiar with you, you're kind of a man about town when it comes to the beer world and the industry specifically. Founder of Secret Shopper and also founder of the Craft Beer Professionals Group, which boasts nearly 15,000 followers on Facebook. That's quite the feat.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing to even think about sometimes.
But yeah, I mean, like, I really want to dive into this episode because I've followed your ascent over the past couple of years and been really impressed with all the things that you've created for beer industry folks. I feel like the Craft Beer Professionals Group has been such a tremendous resource for so many people. So let's get into that a little bit. But first, I want to give a shout out to some of our sponsors. As always, our good friends at OnTap Credit Union make this podcast very possible. So OnTap Credit Union isn't your average financial partner. They make banking as easy as enjoying your favorite beverage while providing great financial advice in a friendly and welcoming environment. With OnTap, Colorado comes first, which is why they offer low loan rates for cars, homes, credit cards, and more. And with OnTap's mobile app, you can have instant access to your accounts, whether you're meeting friends at a local brewery, out on the slopes, or wherever you take your next adventure. Member-owned, Colorado proud, federally insured through NCUA. That's OnTap Credit Union at ontapcu.org. All righty, folks. We do have a few other sponsors, but we're going to get to those in just a bit. Andrew, tell us a little bit about kind of how you got into craft beer.
So I got into craft beer as a consumer. You know, I was a home brewer. I was always taking vacations based around beer. And it wasn't necessarily my goal to actually get into the beer industry side of things. You know, like any home brewer, you know, we always talked about opening a brewery someday. But at that time, I was running a food service. I was really happy with my life. I worked at stadiums and arenas all over the place. I got to work at baseball games, hockey games, even monster truck shows. But probably like all three of you, I know, Brian, you probably get really pumped for monster truck shows.
Gravedigger, baby. Gravedigger. It's all about the grave.
I've seen you way
Midwest,
too many times.
So I feel like when the monster truck rally comes through town, it's like a statewide
holiday. Sleeveless flannel gets on and the trucker hat, and I'm a different person.
So in a weird way, monster trucks played a really big role in my beer journey because, you know, with this company that I ran, I would run monster truck concession operations at stadiums like all across the country, from Indiana to St. Louis, you know, north, south. I was all over the place. But when I would take these trips for work, I would always go to the local breweries and brew pubs. So it gave me an opportunity to really dabble all over the place. And
that's pretty incredible. It seems like a really cool opportunity to just kind of learn the ins and outs of the F&B world without, you know, being, you know, so ingratiated in craft beer that you're kind of jaded by all the other aspects of it. Now, and especially at the time, I feel like, you know, early on, I'm guessing it was like the mid 2000s was kind of around that period. Was that around when you
were... Even in the early 2010s too, up in the mids.
So There probably wasn't much craft beer in stadiums back then. Am I correct in that assumption?
Oh yeah, not so much.
Have you seen
whatever you smuggled in yourself?
Pretty much, you know, gotta get the work somehow.
Whatever's in the big coffee mug.
Totally. How did you end up making that transition into starting Secret Hopper?
No, that's a great question, Tristan. So probably like all three of you, you're always thinking of crazy ideas that you run by your partners and your friends in your life. So my wife was really used to this. So one day she was working at an animal hospital. She's putting my little one to bed right now. She's probably going to laugh when I tell this story. But, you know, I'm like, hey, Stacy, I've got this great idea for a business. And, you know, she was really used to this at this point in our lives. So she sees the little messages appear on her iPhone as she's working at her animal hospital. And she knows what's coming. I'm like, Stacy, let's start a mystery shopping company for breweries. We're going to call it Secret Hopper. And I see the dots appear, the dots disappear, the dots appear, the dots disappear. And she tells me, that's stupid. So what do? You buy the domain name immediately. You plan out the business for endless hours, not knowing what's going to happen. But, you know, it's crazy to believe this was 5 years ago. And at that time, there was only 5,000 breweries, right? And now we're only at 9,000. So my whole premise was you had to do more than make just really great beer. Obviously, you have to make really great beer. That's the most important thing. It's the anchor of our industry. But the whole premise was, you know, you had to also create that memorable experience. And in 2017, people weren't saying that to the extent we're hearing it today in the beer world.
Was it, did you feel like you really were compelled more based on like the good experiences that you were having at places? Or were there a couple times you're like, man, I wish that the owner, the manager, whoever would know about this experience for better or worse? Did you get kind of pushed to anyone?
That's a fun question, Corey, because I'm a really positive person. So I always like to look at even the bad experience as a way to improve. So, you know, I like to try to find those positive experiences that I would have. And you go to the brewery who's just starting out, doesn't quite understand the business of things, and more so think about ways they could improve. So we would go, we'd sit in the tap room like, man, I wish they would do this, or this would be a really great idea, or why didn't they put this here? It kind of had us walking through each experience, thinking of ideas like in the mindset of the business owner, what could be done better. So definitely a combination of both.
Yeah, because some part of me thinks sometimes, you know, with everybody that's worked at a beer bar or at a brewery, you know, you have the home brewer that comes up and wants to talk to the head brewer about the stout that they made and just geek out about it. So I'm trying to, I'm kind of curious, like, do you feel like there is a kind of a fine line of just getting it, getting comments from just anybody or somebody that, you know, you have walked through your program and that you guys have your own standards for like how you talk to people and what you should be looking for?
So it's always the most opinionated people sometimes who give the comments, people who have the really positive experiences or really negative experiences. And I had a friend who ran a tap room around here. I live in Norfolk, Virginia. And it was really interesting to him to talk to him about his tap room because he would talk about it like it was a blur. He'd go in, he'd get the job done and leave. You know, and so often I think we find our workplaces that way. You go in, do what you have to do, and you don't look at the little things. So just hearing him talk about his taproom experience, big picture, but not focusing on the little things that can make a difference, kind of opened my eyes. I'm like, oh man, there's definitely ways we can help improve the experience at taprooms nationwide. And, you know, through the model we have, we do send mystery shoppers in. So people are going in with fresh eyes to focus on those little things that we kind of plan with them ahead of time.
Now, I want to ask you this question because I feel like oftentimes brewery owners have a little bit of a disconnect. You know, they may feel like, hey, like this is a great idea. I want feedback. But at the end of the day, I've come across at least from a marketing standpoint, you provide them with the feedback, you have the professional experience, and then they're like, I don't know that I actually really want any of that. Or maybe it might even just be like, I think we're going to stick to the way that we're doing things. How often do you come across situations like that? And what do you do to try to get through when people don't really truly understand the value that you bring? Because obviously you've done this with so many breweries and you have such a unique perspective that you truly know that like, hey, this is going to help your brewery succeed. This is going to bring in more seats. You're going to convert more regular consumers that come back. What can you do to help change some of those minds that might be a little bit more stubborn?
So as business owners, I think we all have a challenge sometimes taking feedback from others because this is our baby. We're the creative force behind it. We want to think we know what we're doing. But I think one of my favorite things, one of the hardest things to do is let go and accept that there are people out there smarter than you who can give you really great insight. So, you know, when we talk to all these brewery owners and taproom managers, they're creatives. You know, we have to find the way that we can touch on their pain points, you know, and the way we do that is kind of bringing in the finances. Because right now, all the breweries, you know, we've had a challenging few years. It's every way you can find a new strategy to increase the tab of a guest in your tap room. And that's what we do. We find the little ways, and I like to give the data points. And before I launched Secret Hopper, you know, I remember being a kid. I went to baseball games. I knew all the stats, but I wasn't a numbers person. You know, I'm a marketing person, just like you, Trent. I love thinking of ideas, but you appreciate data, you know, and you have these ideas. And that's kind of what I had when I started Secret Hopper. You think about it. If you go to a tap room, someone encourages you to purchase beer to go, yeah, you're definitely more likely to say yes. And it was an idea I had. It was a strategy I preached, but I didn't have the data behind it. You know, as we accumulated a really neat data set over time, I realized that the data backed the strategies, and I actually had the numbers to prove it. Like, for example, this is one of my favorite statistics. Just think about how often, you know, Corey, you go to a tap room, how often does someone encourage you and say, hey, Corey, you really like that lager. Do you want to take some to go? What's your guess? What percent of the time are you asking
that? For the to go, less than 50% for sure.
Yeah, we see it happens about 20% of the time. And when they don't say, hey, Corey, would you like something to take with you? You're only going to say, you know what? I would 9% of the time on your own. But when they say, hey, you know, we have this on to go. It's in our fridge right here. I can grab you some because you don't want to go to the store when you leave. You just want to go home and drink some more. You're going to say yes 49% of the time. And guess what? The tab's going to be $15 higher. So That's the way you can show brewery owners, by just simply focusing on one little thing, the potential to increase tabs by $15 by just asking one question. Only 7 words.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably just say yes out of obligation because I hate confrontation. So I would just feel like I was coerced into buying it because I didn't want to say no to the to the person.
Just stop talking to me. I'll buy the beer.
Like, it's $60? Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's okay.
No, it really is crazy how, you know, and this is something that I do bring up to breweries as I'm going in. It's like, it's insane how just a little piece of signage or even like a table tent or, you know, a different display can completely shift buying habits. And I think that very much aligns with what you're talking about. Before we continue any further, speaking of call to actions, for those who are tuning in with us live, be sure to comment in the comment sections below if you have any questions for Andrew or any of us. We definitely want to hear your feedback and help answer any questions that you might have. And also be sure to follow us on all of your listening devices. If you're liking what you're listening to, give us a little follow, give us a little like, and we'll be sure to continue to put out some really great content for you here shortly. Now, Andrew, kind of diving back into things, you know, when it comes to the past couple of years, we've been coming out of a pandemic. What are some of the major takeaways of some of the most common shifts that breweries have had to make in terms of their customer experience that you're seeing that maybe might have a major impact for breweries? This pandemic kind of completely shifted how we approach beer to go, how we approach events. What are some things that you're seeing from a trend standpoint that have impacted breweries throughout this pandemic?
So, I mean, early in the pandemic, we were seeing brewery visits become much more intentional. People were going out less, and I think people are going out at great levels again as they once were. But, you know, we could talk all day about QR codes. We could talk about all day about change of service models, whether you're offering table service, do it from an ordering counter. But the philosophy that I really encourage breweries to do is simply try anything once. The past few years have taught us you have to think outside the box. We've seen so many great innovations come out from the pandemic and many that will stick. But one of my favorite philosophies to talk about with these breweries is, you know, think about that Tuesday night you have in your tap room. You've got a slow Tuesday night. You've got the same old regular sitting behind the bar. What can you do to make it better? Because you're trying to find ways to get new guests in and get people spending more money. I tell them, try that weird event you've always wanted to try. Because guess what? You try it on a Tuesday night and it doesn't work. You're going to have those same 6 regulars drinking whatever they normally drink and nothing's going to change. But if you try this idea and it latches on, people come out, they enjoy it. You've got this brand new thing in your back pocket you can do, and it's nailed this event you can repeat potentially over and over again. So I think the biggest strategy here, the thing I've seen breweries and tap rooms do that's been successful is, you know, get unique, bring your whole team together. Everybody sit around the table, have some beers, have some pizza, and everybody throw out an idea. There's no bad idea. Some ideas might not be worth pursuing because the finances don't work behind it, but get everybody feeling invested in the big picture that people, one, you know, feel like they contributed to what's happening in the tap room, but two, it might be that one idea that you hadn't thought of yourself.
Yeah, if you've been hesitating about giving Corey's comedy show a try, now's the perfect chance to. I'm
just kidding. Gotta throw it out there. Yeah, if anybody wants to come, I'm around all week.
Tuesday, just throw it out there. Let's see if it sticks. You know.
Yeah, that'd be a perfect time.
In worst case, you tried once, you never ask Corey to come back again.
Yeah, that's most places. So I just get to play every place one time, take their money and their chicken fingers, and then we move on.
Yeah, now, free chicken and free beer, right?
Yeah. One thing I'm really curious about, just about the Secret Hopper thing, I guess, is I remember hearing about that probably maybe when you first started it, or just a year or so ago. It could have been sooner than that, but you know, it seems strange, right? Like you see a Facebook post from somebody that says, hey, do you want to drink free beer and help these breweries like make more money? I'm just like, this sounds like
too good to be true.
That's asking for my
social security. What's the catch, right, Corey?
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about like the process. You know, somebody that wants to, somebody's a secret hopper, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what do they do? Like, what do you?
I remember being a kid. My mom was like a mystery shopper at Ruby Tuesdays. We would go, we'd have the salad bar. And the Ruby Tuesday salad bar, although I probably haven't had in 10 years, it's probably still amazing. But we would go, we'd have dinner, and she would literally have to fax like a 10-page report in. Fax, right? And, you know, who in the beer world has time to read 10 pages about anything? Right. Everybody's wearing so many hats. They're so busy. So it was our goal to design something that the taproom managers, the brewery owners, they could get feedback on the 30 most important points and have these action items. They could say, okay, Corey's doing a great job with this. Tristan needs some work on this. Brian's probably doing a terrible job about everything, you know? Right, Brian? So you would look at, there he is, back on
camera. And he returns.
That's so evil. So we wanted to find ways that they could easily make the progress that they needed to do to make more memorable and profitable experiences. From the drinker perspective, though, who doesn't want to get paid to go to their favorite brewery, right? If I could tell you to dream of the perfect job, getting paid to drink beer seemed like a dream come true. So our model is we send the shoppers in, they're going to have a flight, they're going to follow it up by a pint, and they're going to get paid $20 to go have that experience as long as they provide feedback based on the short questionnaire they fill out. So it's the perfect win-win for anyone who likes craft beer, because you're going to the brewery anyways, probably, and you get to provide feedback to make a difference, which the brewery owners will anonymously get, and you get compensated for your visit, which is like a win. I've always dreamed of getting paid to get paid to drink beer, but I'm not the one getting to do it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I feel like sometimes people might not be like good actors, they put too much pressure on themselves and they just like crumble when they get in there. Like they're just like, hey, can we get you a beer? You're like, I'm here on my own accord. Nobody's paying me. Don't worry about it.
I am not a secret shopper.
Corey shows up in those glasses with the nose and the mustache. He's like, no, this is not me.
And it's just a comical wig.
But in all the years we've been doing this, we have only had maybe two people get called out for doing something overly suspicious, and they're never ever used again.
Yeah,
it's like they're
it's
just like
tough job to fail at, marks, right? You know?
Yeah, some people
you're
just
barking on me, bro.
So, out of curiosity, I mean, what would you say? And it could be bigger breweries, smaller breweries. You know, somebody that had just like an exceptional experience. You know,
and I'm sure also plenty of them. Is this program offered throughout the country, or is there
a specific market? Yeah, so it is nationwide. And when we launched it, you know, I thought, oh, I live here in Virginia. Virginia will be the place we take off first. But that's the beauty of the world we live in now. I can just easily work with someone who's a mile and a half from me as I can someone, you know, 3,000 miles all the way on the West Coast. So we work with breweries coast to coast for the past few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, any standouts? Any from your own personal experience as somebody
so, Corey, I feel like that's a trick question because we are a mystery shopping company, so we do keep the names of our breweries pretty much confidential unless they give us, you know, potential.
Corey's like, can you fax me your client list?
I'll email it to you right now, Tristan.
Not even from a secret hopper perspective, from a company perspective, but personally, now that you know, this is your livelihood and your business, so something that you're probably acutely aware of. Somebody that wasn't even a client of yours potentially, that you just thought their whole experience from top to bottom was exceptional.
Yeah, so I'll give you a good and I'll give you a bad because I know you like the bad too. So yeah.
Well, I actually appreciate the bads more.
Well, let's start with the bad then. So there's a brewery somewhere in the state of Virginia. I will not give up their exact location or reveal their name, but they were having a grand opening. My wife and I were really excited to go. We walked in, and Tristan, I know you mentioned signage a little while ago. We walked in and from the get-go, we were so confused how you order. You know, if you walk into a place and you don't know where to order, that's already be frustrating. So we finally figure out, you know, where to go to order. So we get to the counter, we're looking at the beer menu. And I'm a big stickler for beer menus. I love information. You know, when I go to a brewery, we're sitting there together. I want to talk about it with all of you. I want to talk about the style, the ingredients, you know, anything about that beer that's going to be fascinating, the history behind it, I want to learn. So this place, all they had on the wall was a bunch of random gibberish words, literally. Words that I'd kind of heard before, but no styles, no ABV, no pricing. So I had heard of a few of their beers before. So I get to the line, I'm ready to order. And the person's just there looking directly at me. They don't say a word. They're just awkwardly staring in my direction. So then I feel rushed to order. So I ordered 2 half pours of these really hazy beers that I had semi-heard of before, hoping they'd be really delicious. And they were amazing. They were absolutely amazing. But they go to hand me these beers, and I ask them the question, which is which? And guess what? They could not tell me which was which. So this beer or that beer could have been the best beer I had my entire life, but they weren't able to tell me the difference. So that was kind of frustrating.
Did they lick it?
Did they smoke the joint before they got on their shift? Is it legal in Virginia yet?
Wait, say that again, Corey.
I was saying, it sounds like somebody smoked a joint before they got on their shift. Is it legal in Virginia yet?
Yeah, not just yet. I think we're getting there, though.
Yeah.
What they did, they asked me to pass for
exactly better. I'm just connecting all the dots.
I don't think that was the excuse, unfortunately, this time around.
Yeah. But just like a bad experience from top to bottom, like the second you walk in, it's just, it wasn't user friendly. And that's ordering a beer should be like one of the simplest processes in the world, right? Like,
and they should get me excited. Being a brand new brewery that opened, they should want to teach me about their tap room, welcome me there, ask me if this is my first time, you know, walk me through the beer list. There wasn't anyone behind me. They could have had this longtime guest who would have came over and over again, but guess what? I haven't been back since, unfortunately. And I would love to go, but there's so many other great destinations out there that are doing it right.
Yeah, and it's hard when the menu's in Elvish. I mean, that's the first strike, right?
Yeah. I mean, to your point, there are so many breweries out there. And the one thing that is almost a guarantee to get people to come back, regardless of how they even feel about the beer itself, is the service. And it's having like a really warm and welcoming experience when you're there. Like, you can excuse, maybe I didn't particularly like that one beer that I had, but I'd be willing to give them another shot because my server or beer tender was so fun, or they were very helpful, all these, or anything else like that.
I had an experience the other day. My favorite neighborhood brewery that I go to is Elation Brewing. They're a really great spot, awesome lagers. And I go in and I'm served by this guy who I'd seen before, and we've interacted probably 3 or 4 times. He goes, "Hey, Andrew, what's up?" I never remembered introducing myself to him. I was mind blown that he knew my name. And I'm not going to forget that. It's just little things like that, like, oh, that stickiness. That's why I go back there.
Yeah. Do you feel like sometimes you get kind of a John Taffer look, where people are like, they see you come in, they're like, oh no, the guy's here.
So I don't want that actually at all. You know, I want to go and have beer just like anyone in the industry would go. So it's my goal, especially in my own area, to be friendly with all the brewery staff and owners here, kind of build those personal relationships. That way it's not looked at, oh, Andrew's here again, because I'm not the secret shopper. I'm going there to help you. And if we happen to have a conversation about my feedback, I want to give you the best ideas I can to make it better from my point of view, you know, while we share a beer together.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I think if we can get you a show on Food Network, you're going to be pretty stoked to...
Tristan, if you can get that pitch, I'm down for it.
All right. Sounds good. Real quick, I do want to give another shout out to some of our new sponsors. We've got a couple of really rad events coming up. If you've been to the Boulder Creek Festival before, you'll love their new beer festival element over Memorial Day weekend. The Hyper Local Creekside Beer Festival is Saturday, May 28th and Sunday, May 29th, with pre-sale tickets on sale now. There's no better way to kick off summer than beer tasting by the creek. Top breweries from the Boulder and Longmont area are coming together in Boulder to pour out the best brews they have to offer. From stouts and lagers to pale ales and ciders, there are hundreds of beer samples being served during the festival. Your all-inclusive Creekside Beer Festival ticket covers the cost of all beer pours during your session, and it comes with a commemorative Creekside Beer Festival mug to fill it up and take home with you. Tickets start at just $25 and can be purchased through Eventbrite or bouldercreekfestival.com. I personally love going to the Boulder Creek Fest. It's a really cool event, and they really have grown their beer program over the years, so this is a really rad one to check out.
Yeah.
All right. Getting back into it. Now, you know, Secret Hopper was definitely kind of, it sounded like your launch pad to kind of get things going. But tell me where you got the idea to start Craft Beer Professionals.
No, great question, Tristan. So back then in May 2017, when we launched Secret Hopper, I was actually shocked that there wasn't a place on the internet where you and I and others in the industry could simply have a conversation. I mean, we were spending way too much time on social media anyways. Why not learn a little bit while you're doing that? So I simply launched Crappy Professionals as a Facebook community. And it was, I think, a Sunday in July, 2017. So, you know, we could all build relationships. And like I said, at that time, there was a few forums out there. People were meeting up at industry-wide events once or twice a year, but people weren't speaking to others outside of their area very frequently. And there's so much value to having these conversations. Like a taproom manager here in Virginia who has the opportunity to connect with someone out in California, they're going to swap ideas that can better one another. They're going to ask questions. They're going to learn from each other's struggles and they're going to learn from each other's successes. But, you know, talking about like the local model we had back then, you know, if I'm a brewery here in Virginia and I have a brewery down the street, I'm not going to share my deepest, darkest secrets and ideas with them. You know, at the end of the day, while there is so much collaboration, we also want to be number one in our general area. So I simply created a community for the spread of ideas so we could have those conversations that could, you know, help us better ourselves as a whole.
Very cool, man. I definitely feel like it's been such a great kind of melting pot for people to, you know, exchange tips and tricks and whatnot. And I think you do a really good job of helping to curate some of those conversations a little bit more. But one of the things that I've been most impressed with has been your ability to kind of spin off this following that you've built with craft beer professionals to launch conferences and some really cool events. And I know you have a couple of those lined up for the next week at the Craft Brewers Conference in Minneapolis. Tell me a little bit about the, kind of that process of creating the conferences and the events, and tell us a little bit about what you've got lined up in the next week.
Absolutely. So going from 5 years ago to now, we slowly started adding just, you know, weekly educational sessions. That's kind of how we first went into the more educational type of content. Then when the pandemic came, that's when we really ramped it up, which is hard to believe that was almost 2.5 years ago. It was when the Craft Brewers Conference of 2020 was canceled. You know, we thought, you know, what's everybody going to be doing this coming April? Everybody's going to sit on their couches in their offices. Everybody's still craving the opportunity to learn. So that's when we did our first virtual conference. And back then in April 2020, no one knew how to use Zoom. No one knew how to use Facebook Live. So it was a learning experience for all of us. And it's truly hard to believe we've done 5 virtual conferences to this point. And I think we've fine-tuned and streamlined them over time. And the kind of mindset has changed as well. When we first did these, everybody was consuming the content live. And I'm sure as you all experienced, you know, people don't always watch live. Sure, it's great to watch something live if you have that burning question you want to get answers from Tristan from right then and there. But guess what? You can watch it whenever you want. So while we did build these as a live resource, it's become more of a library people can come back to at any point. And it's been great to build this community because we've kept it 100% free and accessible to all, which is a big thing we stand for. We want to make sure that everyone, whether you're the, you know, the owner, you're the decision maker, but alongside the, you know, brewery bartenders who might be there only 2 days a week, we all deserve to learn and we all deserve to better ourselves both personally and professionally. But then transitioning to the in-person events, it's really funny. We had our first in-person event last September in Denver at Jagged Mountain Brewing. And I think Brian and I might've met for the first time there. And it's bizarre. Yeah, that's right, Brian. Cause like there's so many people I met through the screen just like this. There's people that I knew so well, but had never met in person. And I found myself last Denver in at CBC playing the game, what I called smaller or taller. You know, when you meet someone you've seen for the first time, face-to-face, when you've only seen him through a screen, you know, I don't know how tall Brian is right now. Corey, I have no idea. Tristan, I don't know, because I don't think we've met face-to-face yet. But when you see someone in the flesh, you're like, oh, but that person's smaller, that person's taller. And it was a fun game.
Fun fact, actually, Andrew is 3 feet tall. That's it.
I am tall. That's correct.
I was wondering why Brian started wearing hair bands during CBC last year all of a sudden. I thought it was really random and came out of nowhere, but now it all makes sense.
I go through phases with my hair. But there was so many people in the same situation as myself last year at CBC. We had spent a lot of time in front of computers, and now we were finally meeting this new community face-to-face. And that was unbelievable because so many people knew each other's names. They knew about one another, but they had never actually met face-to-face. And so, you know, we were really excited to start doing our in-person events, and we've got a couple more coming up next week at CBC.
Yeah. What, tell us a little bit about those events. I'm very excited to join for some of them and very excited to finally meet you in person.
No, absolutely. I'm sure we were probably the same place in Denver.
Yeah.
Really, really quick, Andrew, just so everybody knows, if people do want to have access to those live, the conferences that you had recorded, where can they go about getting that?
Yeah. The best way to do it, simply go to YouTube and type Craft Beer Professionals. That's the easiest way to do it. Just YouTube Craft Beer Professionals.
Okay. And I'm sure it's a gamut of like front of house, back of house, anything you can imagine.
Corey, it's literally 350 sessions and we've divided it by business, guest experience, people, and brewing. So you can go through the category that you want and find the sessions most relevant to you. Or if you want to literally watch the whole, you want to binge watch the whole conference, all 50 plus sessions, you can find that playlist and sit at your computer for about 3.5 days.
I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Hey, have fun with it. Lots of calls for that one.
So talk to us about CBC. What you got cooking?
Yeah. So Monday night, we've become great partners with Arrive POS and Hillebrand through the pandemic. We've got a party we're doing with them. That's Monday. It's going to be 7 to 9 p.m. at Arbiter Brewing Company. I've heard they've had fantastic beers, so we're looking forward to that one. And also on Tuesday, we've got an event with Market My Brewery. That's going to be at Inbound Brewing at 6 to 8 p.m. That's Inbound on Tuesday.
Very cool. Well, we'll definitely be out to join for some of those. And we definitely want to talk a little bit more about, you know, how we can help to support your efforts and support your future conferences. Because, you know, one of the big beefs that I have with CBC is that while I think it is incredibly helpful from a programming standpoint for brewers and people on the back of house side, I often find that a lot of the programming that relates to marketing and sometimes even sales is maybe not as applicable. And so I've definitely utilized some of the videos that, you know, you all have put together, and I found some of those a lot more, you know, engaging to the next level, because I can't count the number of CBC sessions that I've walked into and it's like, okay, here's how you create an Instagram post. And I'm like, all right, I just am kind of beyond this, you know, basic 101 level of marketing. So
Tristan, I think we're kindred spirits.
Yeah, man. I mean, it truly is like incredible how you all have been able to kind of touch on some things that haven't really been able, they haven't really been able to kind of capitalize with CBC.
So I think I skew a little bit towards the business side of our industry because that's my background anyways, the sales, marketing, just more the humanizing topics. I feel those are the conversations we're not having as much as we should be, you know, whether it's the more advanced marketing talks, the talks on DEI initiatives. You know, recently we had a panel on what is fair compensation. And this was a fantastic example of the beauty of the internet. I posted a preview post about this panel we're having, what is fair compensation? It turned out that one of our panelists we had, while he is an employment lawyer, he's also very anti-union. Everyone in our community, you know, they commented, they said, hey, you know, we don't think this is right. We need to have someone from the union perspective on there. And we made it happen. So we brought a representative from the IWW on to join the panel. It was a fantastic conversation. You had two people with completely opposing viewpoints, but kind of come together just to share information. And I think that's what we really aim to do, to provide information from both sides of the aisle and everywhere in between. That way, you know, everyone can make an informed decision of, you know, what they want to go with and, you know, what's going to be most valuable for your brewery, whether we're talking about unionization or just marketing strategies. The more information you can have, the better.
Very cool.
Transparency helps with all that stuff, right? And sometimes we only wind up, this is a unique industry in such that it's very social, right? So it's not uncommon to, you know, people from brewery A they go and meet up with people from brewery B, right? And then you just start talking about, everybody likes to complain about IDIG reports in a sales thing, or, oh, I can't believe marketing did that. I can't believe we got to put this initiative out there, or somebody in the tap room or whatever. But it's, you know, that problems exist pretty prevalently within the industry, and they're all shared, right? They're all things that most pain points are similar from spot to spot. But the more conversations you can have in a social setting like that, I think the better for everybody.
No, I 100% agree with you, Corey.
Yeah. Now, kind of on the topic of kind of trends and where this industry is heading. Now, obviously, you deal with your specialty is generally around kind of the taproom experience, but you talked a little bit about business development and kind of like just overall planning from a strategy standpoint. CBC feels like a pretty good time to refocus on some of those trends. The past year, we saw some trends develop, such as the kind of sharp decline of hard seltzer, but then also the rise of ready-to-drink cocktails. And then most recently on Twitter this past week, there was this whole hoopla about, you know, breweries who offer multiple double hazy IPAs and no pilsners. What are you seeing from a stylistic trend standpoint that maybe people can maybe have on their radar as we enter this kind of
so
very
I'm going to try to answer this from my experience side with creating those experiences, with also my limited ability to predict trends for the future. So
sure.
One thing that I believe all tap rooms need to do is be as inclusive as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think having options, I'm going to speak specifically in the tap room space, for everyone is really valuable. You know, when you're having families come to your tap room, if you can have options for the person not drinking, say like, you know, a non-alcoholic beer, I'm drinking an NA option tonight, it's going to get other people to hang out a little bit longer. So I think having diversity in your portfolios in your tap room, specifically options that, you know, will appeal to multiple people. You know, when my wife and I go to a tap room, we like to have that option, you know, where she can have something sour and fruited, or if she's not having anything, she likes to have a soda, or for our kid, we like to have a juice box option. So, you know, silly little options there, but when you're talking tap room experience, the more you can please everyone, the longer the guests are going to hang out. But bigger picture, I definitely like to see the rise of the non-alcoholic beers out there. I can't drink, you know, 8% IPAs like I once used to, especially when I have to work following this call. So it's nice to have options like that, that we can make our third beer. And I do think we're going to continue to see a rise in the NA trend as more breweries continue to even get involved with it. And, you know, in May, we have a conversation coming to craft beer professionals. So you want to brew in a beer, because so many people, you know, they're looking at the trends, but they don't know where to start. So go back to your idea, what you said a minute ago, Tristan, sometimes marketing 101 isn't always valuable, but something like non-alcoholic beer 101, what to do to get started, that is extremely relevant right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a segment that it's been around for forever, right? But it still hadn't really caught any traction until maybe what, the past year or two, people being more health conscious, obviously the rise of things like doing sober months and things of that nature. Just, it seems like people haven't really figured out how to capitalize on it yet. And I'm curious if that's, is the market big enough for something like that? And is it worth somebody's time to make, you know, otherwise why are there more of them out there?
No, I mean, that's a great question. In places like Germany, it's 10% of the market. I'm not the data nerd who can quote stats for here in the States, but, you know, I think there are definitely room for more players in there. I mean, Athletic, the 27th largest craft brewery in the country, right? That's mind-blowing. You know, I've been impressed with Rheingeist growth over the past decade, and they've done extremely well. But then you throw out this brand that's only been around 5 years, and they're the 27th biggest. I think we have more room for this. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see more consumers get into it.
Well, I think it's interesting because it's, to me, it's a little bit of a balance. I think hard seltzer was a good kind of example of what can happen when everybody rushes to enter the same marketplace. And maybe by the point that so many other breweries are trying to get into hard seltzers, it was already a little too late in the game. And so for me, when it comes to the non-alcoholic space, you know, when I'm talking to breweries and they're asking like, oh, do you think I should wade into this? Do you think I should, you know, dive in and go all in on NA beers or even like, you know, super sessionable beers? I think it speaks to, A, do you think you can do it really well? And do you think you can do so without having to make a massive investment in a de-alcoholizer or whatever?
Quarter of $1 million.
Yeah, exactly. Or is there a way that you can, you know, go in on it with a couple people and invest in something that will be more sustainable for long-term growth? Or is it the case that in order to offer people different options, maybe you partner with an Athletic to be able to serve some of their beers on site? And so, you know, I don't think the answer for every single person is we must produce our own NA beers, but I think it is an important lesson in, hey, can you be ahead of the trend and still make a product that's really, really great without breaking the bank? Or maybe it is an investment that you're going to dedicate a significant portion of your business plan into in the foreseeable future. But yeah, I think that there's not, the answer isn't the same for every single brewery, right?
No, I agree. There's a lot you have to invest to get it right. And you don't want to put a product out there that's inferior. And you also have to market it properly and make sure you have the audience to market it to be a success.
Yeah. Totally. Well, it's a good thing you're going to have a panel of people talking about it, because I don't know what the answer is.
I'm excited to learn too. Corey, I am so lucky to surround myself with people smarter than me that if I can glean some glimpse of information each day that I can pass along to someone else, my day is a better day.
Yeah. And when you're doing some of these events and conferences and stuff, and you're putting panels together and how are you going about like choosing subject matters? You know, because you obviously can't do everything, right? Is it a voting process? Do you come up? I mean, do you decide personally that this, hey, this is what we're going to cover this time around? Or how do you filter that?
So yes and yes. So my best question I give to people is when an expert comes to me, say they work with a malting company, like, hey, Andrew, what does your audience want? I give a question right back to them and say, what are your customers and what are the breweries asking you right now? Because you understand them best. Whatever pain points they're dealing with, you're going to be the best one to give that information. So whatever's critical right now, not a year ago. What are they talking about right now? That's the information we want to put out there. And that's the beauty of the internet. We can almost crowdsource and get the pulse of the internet right there, then and there. And also, you know, we are able to ask the audience. I could put a post out in Crappy Professionals right now. By the end of our conversation, we could have 20 different ideas of what people want to hear content on. So that's definitely one way to do it. But there are also issues that I'm passionate about. Like I said, the more humanizing issues, the EI initiatives. We're talking about mental health in the craft beer industry. We're talking about compensation. I want to bring the people issues to the forefront because I believe we're not having enough of those conversations. But when I get the submissions from all the partners who want to present, all the speakers who want to present, and bring them together with the ideas I feel are important, you get a really well-rounded mix of information from the brewing to the business side of things.
That's very cool. I do want to give a little plug for Porch Drinking's events. We've got a pretty exciting lineup of takeovers for the next week, kicking off next Monday, a week from today, taking place Monday, May 2nd, presented by Hopsonomy. Corey, do you want to give us a little quick spiel about Hopsonomy?
It's part of the day job. So Hopsonomy is actually a part of a larger company called Modern Training and Development. It's owned by a guy named Matt Nelson, who is really cool. Love working for the guy. And I'm not just saying that because he pays me. But it's essentially an online platform where people can learn about beer, and not just about the styles, but about service and salesmanship and brewing process. And basically, more than what a styles BJCP person can tell you, right? And because it's available online, it makes it really easy and simple for people to use, and works for small companies and works even better for bigger companies where you're trying to get everybody on the same page, but you might have a lot of different locations. So it's really just a way, kind of like Secret Hopper and Craft Beer Professionals, where the goal is to improve the customer experience. And that starts with the people that are actually selling them the beer.
I need to meet this guy. Where did you say he's going to be?
So I'm going to be there on Monday, but Matt's actually not going to be able to make the trip, but I'd be more than happy to do a little intro for you guys, because it seems like y'all are on the same wavelength in terms of, you know, the initiatives and what you about the industry itself.
Andrew's such a pro. He's already just lobbing it up for us. But so Hopsonomy is presenting our Lager All-Stars Night, which is taking place Monday, May 2nd at First Draft Taproom and Kitchen out in Minneapolis, their Minneapolis location. And that event's going to feature some really big heavy hitters like Perennial, Crooked Stave, Humble Forager, Other Half, More Brewing, Southern Grist, Phase 3, Transient Artisan Ales, and more. On Tuesday, May 3rd, Weldworks and Friends are going to do a Barrel Age Night takeover at First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. All of these events are at First Draft. It's going to feature Weldworks, Perennial, Humble Forager, Cerebral, More Brewing, Untitled Art, Microphone, and Ology, to name a few. Those guys are all going to be bringing out some really tasty big barrel-aged beers. And then our Hop All-Stars Night is going to feature Other Half, Equilibrium, Tripping Animals, Great Notion, Bearded Iris, Phase 3, Second Shift Brewing, Humble Forager, Transient Artisan Ales, Weldworks, and Lupulin Brewing. And that's taking place Wednesday, May 4th, once again, at First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. So be sure to join us out at First Draft. You're going to be out at CBC. These events will kick off at 3 o'clock and go until close. We are going to be recording a mini podcast with some of the founders of these breweries and brewers from these breweries. And then afterwards, they're going to be sampling some rare bottles that aren't typically available on draft for that evening. So you can come sample some free tastings of rare beers and also meet some really rad people within the industry. And then afterwards, be sure to head over to Andrew's events, which I think we have a nice overlap. We're generally going to be recording our stuff earlier in the afternoon, and then we're all going to bounce over to join you, Andrew.
Yeah, come have some beers on CBP.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode, Andrew. We're really stoked to meet you out at CBC this year, and we're thrilled for all the incredible things that you've created with both Secret Hopper and Craft Beer Professionals. I think you've been really active in building some tremendous community and creating opportunities for people to learn some really great stuff. And, you know, that's really what this is all about. This is why we got into the industry. And so I've been eager to speak with you on this podcast for a while.
I was excited when I got your email, Tristan, as well. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, man. Well, we're the three of us are all going to be out at CBC to join Andrew next week. We're excited to record some really cool podcasts with some movers and shakers in the industry, and we'll be back with a couple of big episodes with some major guests. So be sure to follow us on all of your listening devices so that you can stay tuned for the Porchcast. This has been episode 92 of the Porchcast. Before we go, I want to give you a quick heads up on the Vail Craft Beer Classic, which we were fortunate enough to be supported by them last year, and they're back for another go this time around. You know, with summer coming around, one of my favorite things is going to craft beer festivals. With a huge selection of breweries in Colorado, it's almost impossible to try all of them all at once. So festivals like the Vail Craft Beer Classic bring breweries together so you can sit between hundreds of craft beers from breweries all across the state, including breweries that you might not usually get to try at the Denver festivals that are located out on the Western Slope. I'm excited to announce that this year's event is returning on June 17th and 18th. Come to the mountains this summer for an adventurous craft beer tasting experience featuring awesome live music lineup and tremendous beers. Grab your group and enjoy a whole weekend in Vail with lodging discounts available on the Vail Craft Beer Classic website. Also, if you use the promo code PORCH, you'll get 10% off your ticket. So grab your friends, plan for a long weekend in Vail this June. All righty, folks. Thanks again, Andrew, for joining us on this episode of the Porchcast. This has been episode 92. For Bryant, Corey, and I, we'll check you later.